Yeah! What it do, baby?
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode number 744 of Locked On Raptors for Friday, July the 17th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean, and you can find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode of the podcast. Of course, please make sure you're checking out the entirety of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got lots of great stuff for you as sports near a return. Baseball starts in just about a week, so get your Locked On MLB fix, your Locked On Blue Jays fix, you're Locked On whatever baseball team it is that you care about. Please go and subscribe, rate, and review that show. Speaking of Locked On Blue Jays, the host of that show, AJ Andrews, is part of today's episode, along with Mike DiStefano, who is the host of Locked On Leafs. Today, we're doing a Toronto Sports Roundtable episode, where we kind of go around with the Maple Leafs, Blue Jays, and Raptors all nearing a return here, and just kind of talk about where those teams are at, what things are looking like. First segment, we hit on the Blue Jays. Second segment's very Leafs-heavy. In the last segment, we talk a little bit of Raptors, and also do some fun roundtable predictions for each of the teams as we head into the return of sports. As you know, again, dubious as it may be, I feel like that's my caveat every time I do this podcast, but it's worth noting that things are not perfect, things are scary, and hopefully things go off without a hitch, because they're gonna go off for sure. They're not stopping at this point, and because of that, we decided we should have a chat about Toronto sports and where all the teams sit as we head into a very interesting week in the sports world with things really ramping back up. All right, let's, without further ado, get to it. Myself, AJ Andrews of Locked On Blue Jays, Mike DiStefano of Locked On Leafs. We get into it all, from the young, amazing, talented players on the Blue Jays to their future, to the what's going to happen with their closer, who is asking for an extension, says he wants to sign in Toronto. Maybe he's going to get it, maybe he won't. We've got Mike DiStefano talking about the Leafs in the playoffs, always a interesting ride when that takes place, and kind of what's riding on this season. Then we also get into the Raptors at the end, expectations, you know, this being the last hurrah potentially for this team. Lots of fun stuff on this one, so let's get to it. Before we get to it, just a reminder to listen to Locked On Leafs and Locked On Blue Jays daily on both of those wonderful teams as things ramp up here. Highly recommend both AJ and Mike as individual hosts, and now listen in to me and AJ Andrews and Mike DiStefano as we kick off the Toronto Sports Roundtable, the first ever Locked On Toronto Sports Roundtable here on the podcast. Enjoy. Hey, it's Sean Woodley here from Locked On Raptors, and I'm joined for a Toronto Sports Roundtable with the other Locked On Toronto Sports team hosts. First up, AJ Andrews from Locked On Blue Jays. AJ, how are you?
I'm all right, although I find it, you know, funny that for Toronto baseball, you turn to the person the furthest east possible from Toronto.
That's okay. You don't need to be in Toronto to be a wonderful, intelligent voice on the team, which you are.
I'm just saying that if they're expecting a conversation about problems on Yonge Street, I'm not going to be able to answer those questions.
We need hard traffic, hot traffic takes in Toronto. We need your thoughts on light rail versus subways. We need your thoughts on the King Street pilot project. We're already getting very Toronto on this podcast. Someone who is in Toronto and works for TSN 1050 and hosts the Locked On Leafs podcast is Mike DiStefano. He's also on the call. Mike, what's up, buddy?
I'm doing well. I can tell you, and I can handle all the King Street pilot questions. I've been living on King Street for 3 years now. I know very well what the pilot's all about and how frustrating it is trying to drive home when you got to try and drive down King Street and take a left or a right literally at every single stop. So we do want to get into that conversation a little later. I got it covered.
Excellent.
Only if you give me time for the ferry project that's going out to Bedford.
Yeah, I'm personally going to drop some words on the King Street LRT in Hamilton, perhaps some thoughts on the sort of disparity of the upper mountain and the lower part of the city and how it's very hard to get from one place to another. We'll get to traffic maybe later on, although I guess that wouldn't really be Toronto. It would be Hamilton, Toronto, and Halifax Roundtable, which is fine. What we wanted to do on today's show is, with sports coming back, the Blue Jays get kicked off in just about a week for regular season games. I think they play a couple preseason games as well, AJ, against the Red Sox this weekend, correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
So with that coming up, with the Maple Leafs coming back and being the host team in the Hub City in Toronto, as well as the Toronto Raptors getting set to return on August 1st against the LA Lakers, we figured why not bring our minds together to talk about the Toronto sports teams and kind of where they're at, what the situations are for each of them kind of going into these restarts or shortened seasons in the case of baseball has not yet started. It's been a long, long preseason for baseball. So let's start there, AJ. The Blue Jays are rebuilding or sort of moving from rebuilding into being sort of a pseudo playoff intentioned team, maybe not good enough to make the playoffs. Obviously, they brought up a lot of their great talent last year in Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio and Vlad Guerrero Jr. And they, of course, will be playing their games in Toronto after much debate and conversation about where they were going to play, whether it was Dunedin, whether it was Toronto, whether it was going to be Buffalo, just thrusting a baseball season onto a city that does not have a baseball team and probably didn't want it so much. AJ, the Blue Jays are exciting. They're a team I'm thrilled to watch. I mean, they had a split squad game a couple split squad games this week that I watched and was enthralled, even though they were, the rules in place allowed for Jacob Wagaspak to just call an inning over after he got his tits lit a little bit by Reese McGuire, and he was able to just say, nope, I'm done, get me out of here. But even then, I was very excited for the Blue Jays. So, AJ, what's up with the Blue Jays? Where are they at heading into this season? And what should Toronto sports fans be expecting from our beloved boys in blue?
Well, I can say for one thing that they should not be challenging the Orioles for last place like they did last year. Only by the grace of a truly disgusting team were they spared the bottom of the AL East. But there's reasonable cause for optimism with the Blue Jays. Like you said, you do get full years from Vladdy Jr. and Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio this season. The signing of Hyunjin Ryu, as well as Tanner Roark, and the acquisition of Chase Anderson should hopefully stabilize a rotation that had to rely way, way too many times on the likes of Edwin Jackson and Ryan Furibend and just other random cast-offs that they could pluck from AAA. So that should lead to improvement. They can make a playoff push if things go right, but honestly, I wouldn't be expecting it. 500 is more the goal this year, mm-hmm. which they can do, and they're probably going to be using most of the year to assess the outfield situation and figure out how they're going to move forward, hopefully with filling that right field slot just while they wait for Austin Martin to get acclimatized and be ready to contribute at a major league level, be it at center field or at third base, because mm-hmm. Vlad Jr.'s move over to first kind of opens that up, and Travis Shaw's only on a one-year deal. So there are a lot of moving pieces for the Blue Jays to consider as they look towards contending and hopefully 2021. And yeah, this is going to be a weird experimental year. The biggest question probably will Nate Pearson be a part of it? Because he mm-hmm. threw batting practice yesterday and he struck out 6 of the 11 batters he faced on some filthy pitches. Teoscar Hernandez just looked bemused when he struck out. Like, Nate Pearson's so good.
Yeah. The giddiness in your voice is also what I'm feeling about the beef castle who is Nate Pearson. I can't wait to watch that dude. It's likely that he's going to be held down at least for the first week of the season because baseball is stupid and service time manipulation exists even in a 60-game season, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That seems to be the plan.
Yeah. Very cool. Got to love how baseball works, but excited that we don't have to wait 2 months to have him come up, I suppose. 5 days is not so much.
In the sim season, I waited until May because, like, well, that's what the Blue Jays are going to do. I waited until May. And then he got injured in his first start, so I had to wait until, like, May 31st to actually get the full Nate Pearson experience. But, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the other thing I learned is that Toronto's bullpen will be frustrating. So I know there have been a lot of talks about Rafael Dolis looking really good and Jordan Romano potentially challenging for a late inning spot, which I hope they do because Anthony Bass was kind of disappointing. I hope he does not live up to what I saw out of him. But also the bullpen's probably the easiest thing to fix if you're really in contention. I mean, Tim Hill got dealt yesterday from the Royals, so obviously he's not an option anymore now with the Padres. But there are things that the Blue Jays can do to work on that as opposed to just, you know, kind of dumpster diving the way they have been. And of course, with guys like Shun Yamaguchi in there too, there are a lot. It's a very versatile team that the Blue Jays have with a lot of pieces that can be kind of shuffled around and seen where they fit. And I think that's going to be the theme of 2020.
Yeah, I like the – yeah, sorry, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, well, I was just kind of wanting to jump off that point because there's been also a lot of talk about Ken Giles and his contract negotiations and whether or not, you know, he's going to be a guy who you sign and lock up as a long-term piece to kind of be the back-end closer for that bullpen. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think ultimately he does re-sign here in Toronto, or does he become a trade chip come the end of August?
Sign him now.
Well, there's sign a difference between long-term. Wanting to sign him, but do you think the Blue Jays will, or do you think they'll go the trade route?
If Mark Shapiro is smart, and this is why I didn't really understand the big push to move him last year. I think the injury to Giles' elbow was a blessing in disguise, because he's still young. Like, it's not like he's on the back end of his career yet. If you sign Giles like a 3-4 year deal, you're still getting his prime years. Now I know baseball is a little more fickle than say hockey or basketball, where you can't really project how well speed will hold up, and Giles's big thing is his speed. He plays his slider off his fastball, so he needs to have the threat of 100 miles an hour to make the slider really devastating. But he's shown such a renewed confidence in himself in Toronto. Last year was like one of the best reliever seasons I think any Blue Jays pitcher has ever put up. Mm-hmm. Just his ability to keep runners off the base paths, which is a problem for a fair amount of pitchers on this team, is being able to deliver strikeouts when necessary. And he's already proving that, you know, despite the reputation he carried from Houston, when, you know, he was the guy who punched himself in the face on the field.
Yeah.
And he's emerged as kind of a leader in that bullpen, which is something very necessary given just the overall lack of experience back there. There's not a Sung Hwan Oh, there's not a Tyler Clifford, not a John Axford that can really be that kind of veteran mentor to a lot of these guys. I mean, Dolis is just coming back from overseas. Yamaguchi's coming back from overseas. Anthony Bass has had a couple years. Giles is the mentor back there. And the comments he's made in public about, you know, wanting to set a good example, making sure that the protocols are being taken seriously. This is a guy who sounds like he has matured and become a leader. And that's really valuable to have to a bullpen that, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get out of. And Giles is as reliable as you can get right now. So I have no idea why there haven't been more long-term discussions with Giles. Like I said, a 3 or 4 year deal averaging about $10 million per, that is totally value for him. I think that's what Will Smith got in Atlanta. So that's perfectly on par with someone of his talent, and I do not know why that has not been extended yet. There's no reason to trade ships anymore. Austin Martin's your last piece. Lock up the guys you have that know. I mean, Randall Grichuk got a 5-year deal, and you're telling me Ken Giles can't even get 3 or 4.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think Giles is a guy who I personally would want them to lock up long-term and kind of solidify that bullpen. And then from there, you kind of look for your 8th-inning guy, your 7th-inning guy, and who knows, maybe they do have that guy in the lineup right now, whether it's Romano or, you know, Dolis could turn out to be that player, or they do end up signing somebody. Keep in mind, you know, last year they signed some guys right at the end of camp and they turned out to be pretty good trade chips too. So that happens quite often. The other question mark that I think is surrounding the Blue Jays right now is the outfield. They didn't really do much over the offseason to improve it either. Going in, they're going to be going with Teoscar Hernandez in center. Well, I guess center field is kind of going to be a bit of a battle within camp, and then Gurriel and Grichuk. Do you like the way that the outfield is shaping up, or do you think that that's still going to be a weakness and something that's going to need to be addressed going forward?
I When I looked at the roster this season, I figured out pretty quickly that this was, you know, as we said, this is going to be an experimental year to try and figure out who's going to be a contributor going forward. I mean, if you were building a contender right now, Derek Fisher nor Teoscar Hernandez are guys you want as your starting right fielder. They may be able to prove something this year. I have little faith in Derek Fisher to be able to do so, but it's possible maybe he figures something out and can actually bat above 200. But that seemed to be the theme of this year. And for guys who, you know, are Anthony Alford's out of options, so he has to, you know, put up or shut up whether he can actually be a major league outfielder as opposed to just a quad A guy. You have Jonathan Davis, who's been pushing him and who's been looking spectacular defensively. But with the drafting of Austin Martin, the Blue Jays can afford to take their time, knowing that they have a guy who they can probably plug into center field and then move Grichuk over to right, where his arm is more effective. And then, you know, if neither Fisher or Hernandez turn out to be what the Blue Jays need, then they can just cut ties and be, all right, we tried, didn't work, let's go with Martin and Grichuk. And for the record, I got so, like, in my brief time as head honcho of the Blue Jays, I got so freaking frustrated with Derek Fisher and his strikeouts that I traded him to Oakland in May. And he promptly tore his UCL, so.
As you mentioned, you've been doing a simulation on Lockdown Blue Jays all pause long, and everyone should definitely go check that out. And yeah, I mean, just a note on the Ken Giles thing and just all of this, I mean, it does feel as though, you know, the way the team is trending, this is kind of a team that is now trying to come out of its dark ages, and you know, signing good players you have on the roster for longer term deals seems like to make a lot of sense. And you know, it would line up with signing Hyunjin Ryu, for example, which was, I think, a wonderful signing and a good sign that they're ready to sort of become contenders and, you know, move towards that at least over the next couple of years. So everyone make sure you're checking out Locked On Blue Jays as AJ covers all of that. A team that was kind of in the position the Jays are in like 4 or 5 years ago and is now kind of in a bit of a, I don't want to say they're in like a stagnant phase because they're not. They've run into some tough times in the playoffs and whatnot against some very good teams. And, you know, I think had the bracket not been stupid because the NHL's playoff format is broken, maybe they go further, is the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course. Mike, you cover them wonderfully on Locked On Leafs. And it's kind of same question I threw to AJ at the start. What's the deal with the Leafs? Where do they sit coming into the restart? They take on the Columbus Blue Jackets starting next or 2 weeks from now, I suppose, in the qualifying round to try to make it into the actual playoffs proper, although I guess they've officially said that the qualifying rounds are now the playoffs because that was, of course, a thing the NHL was, for some reason, making into a big deal because the NHL loves to do things like that. Mike, where are the Leafs at right now? What are your expectations of them and sort of what should people be looking for as their season gets going?
Yeah, so I think the Leafs are in a pretty good position right now. I think they'll be going into the playoffs against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are technically a lower seed than them. So they'll quite literally have home ice advantage, but also are considered the home team going into it. But I don't think it's going to be as much as a walk in the park as some people think it'll be, because Columbus is a very well-coached team. And I think that John Tortorella will have his guys ready to go to play the Leafs. Like, they're just going to be suffocating and take away all the space needed for the Leafs to be the superstars that we know they can be when they have the time to do so. So I think that it's going to be this series coming up against Columbus is going to be hugely dependent on coaching. And then also goaltending. I think goaltending is going to be huge. Whether or not Freddie Anderson, who historically gets off to a pretty slow start to begin the season, and I mean, you take a look at the amount of time since the pause, it's been a full off season, and he has a history of starting off slow. So is he going to continue that trend, or is he going to buck the trend and have a pretty solid start and ride it all the way through the playoffs? That's going to be important for this team. That's one of my burning questions that I have. And yesterday I talked about on my show, I had three burning questions, and that was one of them. So I think that's going to be something as well. And I just think that at the end of the day, I do like the way that it sets up for the Leafs. I have them winning this 5-game series. As far as where the expectations are, look, at the beginning of the year, I think this team, you looked at them, and it, like you alluded to, the playoff format kind of stinks, and it does make it difficult because the Leafs may be a top five team in the league, but in order to even make it through to the first or second round, usually you're going to have to go through Boston or Tampa, who, well, they happen to be one of the top three teams in the league. So it is kind of tough when you say, okay, we got to make it through to the first one. And now I'm looking and it's like, okay, we have a chance to make it through to the first round and not have to play that team. So when you talk about expectations, I think the expectations are to get to the second or third round of the playoffs this season, because this is a year where they have an opportunity to kind of avoid those two teams depending on how things end up shaking out. So, but at the end of the day, after 3 years of first round eliminations, they got to win the opening round first and foremost to get through, and then they got to try and win that first round, or else there's going to be some question marks going forward about this team, whether or not they can get it done.
I did want to ask you about that, Mike, because like I know Columbus is a much tougher out now than they would have been in April, because they got Seth Jones back. But what if Toronto lost? And, you know, obviously there would be some hand-wringing, like, oh no, we can't even beat Columbus now. But what if, you know, the second NHL draft lottery goes on and you start playing the NWO music as Toronto is announced to be the victor, and you add Alexis Lafreniere to that, and then maybe trade Willie Nylander for a defenseman or something. Don't... Yeah. How, if Toronto, like, I mean, they have a 1-in-8 shot anyway. If Toronto did that, do you think the fans would be happier with that as opposed to a potential second round loss to Boston or Tampa again? Or would the sheer volume of hatred from the rest of the country just laser focused on the Maple Leafs outweigh the gain of having Lafreniere for the foreseeable future?
So that's kind of a tricky question, only because I think any team would benefit from having Lafreniere on their squad. That being said, I think that the Leafs are in a fortunate position where they're actually like uber talented up front, where the addition of a Lafreniere doesn't necessarily put them up a tier into a conversation as Stanley Cup champions. They're kind of already approaching that tier themselves. So I think that although it would certainly be welcomed for them if they were to lose, you know, you kind of have a decent little side prize of a chance to win the number one overall pick. And I think the anger and frustration would be very short-lived if the Leafs ended up winning that pick. That being said, I think a true Leafs fan should want the team to go far into the playoffs. So if you're asking, what would you rather do? Lose and have a chance at number one overall, or win and try and move on and try and go for a Stanley Cup? I think any fan has to say you would much rather go for that cup. Although it's the fun thing to say, like, oh, let's lose and go for the number one pick just because it's fun to say. At the end of the day, celebrating a championship is a lot more fun. Sean, you know very well how fun it is going on a championship run.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, with Lockdown Leafs, would love to have that similar success, and all of Leafs Nation would love to have that similar success. So I would rather go forward and just kind of think about it. Okay, I want to win, but if we lose, there is a decent little consolation prize, but I would prefer to try and make it as far as we can in the playoffs.
It would be extremely Maple Leafs to win the Stanley Cup in like the one playoffs where people are like, there's going to be an asterisk if someone wins this thing.
Oh, and you can't have a parade. We've been planning the parade down Yonge Street for 60 years, and you can't even do it.
After seeing what happened with the Raptors, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of that was a really fun day. I would never trade that in for anything aside from the unfortunate incident that took place kind of around the climax of it all. And you know, it was, that day kicked ass. I can't lie. I had a wonderful time. I had many beverages while I was waltzing around downtown and baking in the heat. It was a pretty damn good time. On that note, we should get into the Raptors, I suppose.
I was just about to ask you how you feel about the Raptors' chances. I mean, just listening to pundits across the continent, they seem to be rather bullish on the Raptors' chances going into this bubble just because of, you know, the cohesiveness of the team and the coaching of Nick Nurse. Just they all seem to be breaking the Raptors' way, especially when you look at the Lakers losing Avery Bradley, potentially losing Rajon Rondo, and then Milwaukee still needing to prove itself and being uncertain. I mean, Giannis didn't have a court to practice on during quarantine. Mm-hmm. So how much more confident are you feeling about the Raptors' chances of repeating now as opposed to maybe when the pandemic started?
Yeah, like I still think the Bucks are the favorite, and actually, it's funny. Locked On Raptors has a running bit where we like to credit Eric Bledsoe for his work in getting the Raptors a title, considering he disappeared like a pumpkin in the Eastern Finals, and he actually tested positive for COVID-19 and is not yet in Orlando. He should be there soon, I would assume. I think he tested positive quite a while ago. Hope he's okay and everything. Hope he was asymptomatic and all is good there. But you know, that's a fun little joke that I think you know, in less heavy times, we would definitely be leaning in on it. Oh, the Bucks' chances are much better now if Eric Bledsoe's not available. But, you know, I still think the Bucks are the favorites. Giannis is the best player. Basketball often comes down to who has the best player, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you have Kawhi Leonard on your team. And so I still think the Raptors are extremely good, and they're still my favorites to make it to the conference finals and give the Bucks at least a series. And they do have the blueprint, right? They have they have the defensive horses. Yes, they don't have Kawhi Leonard anymore, but they do have OG Anunoby, who I think if you compared Kawhi's defense last season in the regular season to OG's defense, it's not even close. Like, OG's been the better defender than Kawhi was last year, despite Kawhi making it to an all-defense team. You know, playoffs was obviously different, and Kawhi, you know, stepped up and guarded Giannis in the Eastern Finals, and that was the thing that changed the series. But OG has been always pretty good at least giving Giannis a hard time. They have Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Pascal Siakam, all bodies they can throw at Giannis. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, even if they want to throw him in just to, you know, annoy him a little bit and fall down at his ankles once in a while, because that is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's whole bag. It's just falling down with style. He is Buzz Lightyear. You know, Look, the nice thing about this season is that even though I don't think the Raptors necessarily have a great chance of winning it all, even if they don't, they've defended their title so nobly with their 46-18 regular season record, and the fact that, you know, despite an incredible run of injuries where everyone on the team except for OG Anunoby and Terrence Davis, an undrafted rookie who played all 64 games or whatever it was for the team. Outside of those two, everyone missed an extended period of time at some point or another. Marc Gasol missed two stretches. Norm Powell missed a couple long stretches as well. And they still managed to just rattle off wins and destroy teams over the course of the entire season. And so having their entire rotation together, I'm sure you've both seen the pictures of skinny Marc Gasol. The sort of word on him is that he looks as good as he has in years, and he's kind of recovered from his summer of drinking rosé and winning gold medals for Spain and not really getting any chance to rest. And so I think they stand a really good chance. The second round will be a tough hurdle because the Boston Celtics are also very, very good. You can listen to yesterday's Locked On Raptors, actually, as we talked about the Celtics at length with Michael Pina of many, many outlets. He's wonderful. So go check that out. But yeah, it was a wonderful season. It will be a wonderful season no matter how this thing ends. And, you know, the future is certainly murky because we don't know, A, what Giannis is going to do in the offseason. He is very much the apple of Toronto's eye in the summer of 2021. And, you know, their kind of future is going to be planned around what he does, I think. And so we can't really say what this season means for the future of the team. I'm just glad, you know, as much as I am pretty like skeptical, and I think it's maybe not the greatest idea to be doing this basketball tournament in the global epicenter of the pandemic, I think the fact that the Raptors get a chance to finish this thing out and sort of put a cap on this season, whatever that cap ends up looking like, it is a really nice thing that Raptors fans are going to get to see that. And so that's kind of my read on it. They're very good. They're not as good as the Bucks, but, you know, things can happen. It's going to be a weird, bizarre tournament where guys might fall ill, and that's horrible, but that could change the complexion of things. And, you know, hopefully they cancel it if too many guys get sick. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with the Raptors right now.
I think one of the questions also, and going forward too, for the Raptors, at least in my opinion, is like, this is kind of a, I don't want to say it's a last hoorah with this group, but you have, they have a lot of contracts coming up at the end of the season, right? Like Ibaka's going to be due, Gasol's going to be due, Van Vliet's going to be due. Like, they have a lot of guys who are going to need to get signed if they want to try and go for, you know, another kick at the can over the next couple of seasons, kind of keep this group together. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Are they going to stick around together? Do you think that they'll end up getting re-signed, or do you think that this is kind of their, all right, boys, let's get it going, because this is probably the last time that this team, specifically led by Lowry and Ibaka and Gasol and Van Vliet, are all going to be together?
Yeah, I think if, you know, I've kind of gotten past the point of needing to maximize the odds of winning a championship in the next couple of years, just because they have one already, and I'm cool if they just kind of run back guys that I like rooting for, which is what they have right now. So if you gave me the option, I would pay Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol for another year or two just to keep them around. Fred VanVleet's a super interesting one too, because he's going to be one of the best free agents on the market this year in a pretty depressed market. But the Raptors also, if they have designs on Giannis, you know, he fits perfectly as a point guard on a Giannis team. And that's something I think you have to consider. And, you know, he fits perfectly with anybody. He's a great ball handler. He's a great off-ball threat. Like, he kind of works with anybody. And so I think he's proven this season that he's worth whatever he's going to get, whether it's like $20 million a year, whatever it is. I think I'm pretty comfortable paying Fred whatever he's going to get. And then you have Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby that are also kind of those linchpins going forward, along with Terrence Davis, Norm Powell. So regardless of what happens, I think the team is set up pretty well. But yeah, there is that sort of sense of finality a little bit when it comes to Gasol and Ibaka in particular, because I don't think both will be back next season. I hope they are. I think one might be back, but I don't know which one. I think the playoffs will kind of tell that. You know, Ibaka is a little bit younger, and, you know, he has had a really, really great season. One of his best ever, and is probably going to get paid this offseason, whereas Gasol is 36 years old, and he's kind of near the end, but at the same time, he kind of is the captain of the defense still.
He's a new man, though.
He is a new man. Yeah, he's looking 33, baby. Yeah, it's a I would hope that they keep him around and, you know, just kind of have him be their sort of back line for the next little while. But yeah, I think that's another big reason why I'm excited the season is actually happening, at least in the Raptors context, because we do get to see the last hoorah for these guys. And, you know, if it is the end, man, was it a run? It was just so, so fun. And this team deserves to have a proper, you know, farewell, if that's what this is going to be.
Quickly, one last question I got here, just before we wrap things up, but you know, heading into this weird 22 team format, finishing up the regular season, it's a different than what the NHL decided to do, so I'm curious to get your thoughts. You know, playoff seeding is going to be up for grabs. The Raptors currently holding, I believe, a 3-game advantage over Boston. The Raptors, though, with a pretty tough schedule down the stretch comparatively to the Celtics, does that worry you at all, or do you think that they should be good to go and should still end up claiming the number 2 seed in the East?
Yeah, I mean, the seeding doesn't matter as much when there's no home court on the line. Like, I think very much you could have said 2-3 Boston Toronto, like, that will decide who wins that series, and whoever has home court for game 7 will win it. It's less important now. I mean, the 6th seed could be Philly or Indiana, or will be Philly or Indiana, and that's a tough matchup, tougher than the Magic or like the Shadow Nets, and the weird team they're sending down there. But yeah, I think the seeding is not terribly important. I think they'd like to hold on to number 2, and I think they will, because as much as Boston's schedule is easier on paper, they play a bunch of teams that are going to be fighting for 8 seeds and play-in tournaments and things like that, whereas the Raptors play the Lakers and the Bucks and a lot of teams that just might not really care all that much in this lead-up, and they might be taking it kind of easy. So on paper, the Raptors' schedule is more difficult, but in reality, I'm not sure it's all that daunting. So I think, yeah, the seeding is what it is. I think they'll be careful with Gasol and Lowry and Ibaka and sort of ramp them up slowly as to not pull any hammies or anything like that, and it'll be... Like, I think this team will come together pretty quickly as well, because they are so smart. They do have great chemistry. Their defense is kind of what they rely on, and that's such a well-oiled machine at this point that I'm not too worried about that. AJ, did you have any Raptor stuff you wanted to throw my way?
Well, I basically threw out my piece at the beginning. I was just gonna say, I mean, when they play the Lakers, I mean, there is a 33% chance that J.R. Smith will forget the time again and just give the Raptors a win that way. So that'll help in seeding.
But that would be fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, I I especially like what you said about Philadelphia and trying to avoid them, because like mm-hmm. like if they want to go through with this and they're taking Ben Simmons off the perimeter and putting him inside as the power forward and letting Shake Milton essentially run the offense, that could result in a much more dangerous Philadelphia team that would actually have the ability to match up if they go double with Gasol and Ibaka or Gasol and Siakam inside. Mm-hmm. That all of a sudden becomes a much more dangerous matchup. And, you know, that wasn't going to be a problem if he had to face Philadelphia before. So I think they'd much rather get an Indiana team that doesn't know if Victor Oladipo is going to be playing or not. So I agree that it's going to be very, very important to actually hold on to that second seed. I think they can. I don't think Boston can make up three games in eight contests, mm-hmm. but I do kind of grieve you. And I think, yeah, it's going to be either Gasol or Ibaka who goes in the offseason to make sure Fred gets paid.
Yeah.
Because they're not losing Freddie V.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's top priority at this point, and as he should be. He's the best. All right, we have a couple minutes left. Let's go around the horn and make official hard and fast predictions for what each of Toronto's teams are going to do this season. We didn't really get a chance to talk all that much about the hub cities or the fact that the Jays are playing in Toronto and inviting all these other teams to play to Canada to play as quote unquote essential workers.
Do we want to talk about Edmonton flooding its own stadium or what?
Oh, that is a whole lot. Check out Locked On Oilers with Tom Gazzola for that. He will have the full update on the hub city underwater out in Edmonton. We may have to do another one of these roundtables to kind of get a feel of what the hub cities are looking like. But quick, let's go around the horn. Quick predictions of what each of these teams is going to do. Why don't we all predict for each three teams? So, okay, let's start with the Blue Jays. AJ, you go first on the Jays.
I think the Blue Jays are going to be above 500, but I think they will challenge for one of those like wild card spots. I think this is going to be a building base for 2021 when they're serious contenders, but I'm predicting I'm going to say 32 and 28. I'm going to give them a little more credit than some of the other pundits who are like 28 wins for them. I think they got 32 in them. I think Mike? Shoemaker comes back and makes the difference.
Oh, I love Matt Shoemaker. Mike, what do you got for the Jays?
I wouldn't say I'm as optimistic as AJ is on this one. I'm looking and I'm seeing a 27-33 team. They just got such a tough schedule, like having to play the NL East. You know, they've got, first of all, the AL East is the toughest league in baseball. So you got to play the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays. And then you also got to go and play the NL East, where you got to play the Braves and the Nationals. And it's just going to be such a tough, tough series and such a tough season in just 60 games. So, you know, if they can knock off 27 wins, I think they might be able to get to 500, but I don't think they go over 500, but I'm going to go 27-33.
I am going to lean into it and say 36-24, second wild card.
Wow.
Nate Pearson, top five Cy Young. Bo Bichette hits 20 home runs in 60 games. And we're talking about playoff baseball, literally in Toronto. Or I guess no, they won't be in Toronto. They'll be the road team for the wild card after the second wild card. But it's 60 games. It's weird. Random stuff's going to happen. I'm feeling a good Jays team.
I was going to say, no offense, Mike, I think you're giving some of those NL East teams a little more credit. I mean, Washington's missing contributors. Atlanta's got Freddie Freeman in a hospital bed. The Mets have already lost one starter, might have lost another. So you're saying that Rick Porcello is going to win vital games for them. It's a little easier road for the NL. And the Red Sox are down because they traded the best player in the division for practically nothing. So I do think it's a little easier road than you give them credit for. And then, of course, the Orioles. That's like guaranteed victories there.
Oh, Marlins, yeah. Too.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, 36-24. It's happening. Quickly, Mike, prediction for the Leafs.
Stanley Cup or bust.
I like it. I will say they beat the Jackets. It's wonderful. They get through. Then they don't get Boston. They get whoever the worst we perceive to be of the four teams. I guess maybe like Philly. They get Philly in the round robin, or they get after the round robin tournament for the top seeds, and they lose to Philly in seven games in a very nightmarish fashion. AJ, what do you got?
Okay, that worries me because then that means Pittsburgh has a legit shot at the number one seed if they're facing Philly. Oh, so that God, scares me.
Yeah.
I think Columbus doesn't have the firepower to take advantage of Toronto's defense. So unfortunately, no Lafreniere for you. I think they eliminate Columbus in four games and then go on and lose to Boston in four. Sparing you the heartbreak of a game seven loss.
And lastly, Raptors. I've got the Raptors going out in six games in the conference finals to the Bucks, very nobly. And everyone's quite happy and good vibes and good feelings after that happens. AJ, what do you got?
I think they win.
Ooh, I'll take it.
Like it.
I think they beat the Lakers in six. I think LeBron gets too tired. He has to carry that team, and Anthony Davis is at that level for the first time. I don't think the Bucks can get out of their own way enough. And yeah, I'm going to give them back to back.
Two straight rings for Eric Bledsoe. Got to love it. Mike, what do you got for the Raptors?
I'm going to go in between you guys. I think they beat the Bucks in the conference final, but then lose to the Lakers in the final. They just haven't been able to beat LeBron. I don't think that's going to change. So I think they'll make another finals appearance this season and unfortunately run into the juggernaut of LeBron and Anthony Davis. And LeBron's going to bring a title to L.A.
You know what? This was a very happy, good vibes podcast until that. And now I'm feeling quite sad.
J.R. Smith in crunch time. Just remember that.
I mean, still won a couple titles with him. So.
Oh, man. All right. This was wonderful, you two. Thank you so much for being on the round table with me. This was great. Everyone, make sure you're checking out Locked On Blue Jays, Locked On Raptors, Locked On Leafs, and get all of your Toronto sports news updates every single day on the Locked On Podcast Network. AJ, Mike, this was lovely. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.